This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. Saudi Arabia has threatened to retaliate for any sanctions imposed against it after President Trump said the kingdom deserves, in his words, severe punishment if it's responsible for the disappearance and suspected murder of Washington Post contributor Jamal Khashoggi. Mr. Trump also said he does not want to halt Saudi Arabia's most recent military purchases from the United States.
It's 450,000 jobs. It's the best equipment in the world. But if they don't buy it from us, they're going to buy it from Russia, or they're going to buy it from China, or they're going to buy it from other countries.
Turkish officials have said they fear a Saudi hitman killed and dismembered Khashoggi, who wrote critically of the Saudi crown prince. The kingdom has called all allegations baseless, but has not offered any evidence Khashoggi ever left the consulate. Meantime, Saudi Arabia, the world's top oil exporter, had a turbulent Sunday with their stock exchange plunging as much as 7% at one point over investor fears of sanctions. Reuters is reporting that Congolese migrants and officials say dozens of people were killed this month in neighboring Angola in a crackdown on diamond mining, an accusation Angolan security forces strongly denied. Angola has launched an operation to clear out tens of thousands of people involved in mining in order to attract more private investment. In Syria, it's unclear if jihadists have left a buffer zone created in northwest Idlib province to separate rebels from pro-government forces. The Russian-Turkish deal is aimed at averting an all-out government assault on the last major rebel stronghold in Syria. Meantime, the border crossing between Syria and Jordan officially reopens today after being closed for 3 years. This is VOA News. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has threatened painful blows against Hamas if it does not halt protests along the Israeli-Gaza border. Some 14,000 demonstrated on Friday. The Prime Minister also was asked about the case of an American student, Lara Engelson, barred from Israel under a law targeting pro-Palestinian protesters.
But every country and every democracy, and many democracies, have special arrangements where they decide who to let in and who not to let in. If you come in and you're virulently against America and you try to come into the United States, there's a good chance you won't be let in.
Augustin, seeking to pursue studies at Hebrew University, had been in detention, fighting deportation since October 2nd as she appeals her case to Israel's Supreme Court. In Yemen, at least 15 civilians were killed in an attack on a minibus near the embattled port city of Hodeidah, with the Houthi rebels blaming it on the Saudi-led airstrike. At least 20 other people were reportedly wounded. Civilians fleeing the fighting for Hodeidah face malnutrition. Many have been admitted to a hospital in Aden, where Dr. Aida Hussein works.
I have found here they are suspected for sepsis and more likely to die. These patients are more likely to die. She's 10.1 kg. She must be 15. You can't imagine, this is the measurement of 2 years.
Dr. Hussein refers to an 8-year-old girl who is half the weight she should be, the result of not having enough to eat for 2 years. German Chancellor Angela Merkel's conservative allies lost their absolute majority in Bavaria's state parliament by a wide margin in a regional election Sunday, a result that could cause more turbulence within the national government. The Christian Social Union had their worst performance since 1950 in a state vote in Bavaria, which it has traditionally dominated. Benoit Kampmark is a Europe scholar at Australia's RMIT University.
What's at play here is a populist revolt against traditionalism, the traditional parties that we're seeing in Bavaria, that we have been seeing in other European countries as well, albeit this at the regional level. So the traditional base, which has been so vital to German politics for so long, and the CSU-CDU coalition being possibly threatened in terms of the broader German framework. So we are seeing gains being made by the parties that several years ago would not have imagined gaining as much as they have.
Kampmark said the main issue in the election were the rise of populism and whether Germany should be letting in so many migrants. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatia in Washington. Today is Monday, October 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. One of the female candidates in Nigeria's 2019 presidential election is demanding a televised debate with other candidates.
We must have a presidential debate so that all candidates would be able to tell the Nigerian people their thought process, their capacity to have identified the real problems of the people and their solution to these problems.
Obi Agele Ezekwesili is the standard-bearer of the Allied Congress Party of Nigeria. South Africa's deputy president is in South Sudan to shore up that country's peace implementation effort. Rwanda's foreign minister is the new secretary general of the International Organization of La Francophonie. And the DRC army beefs up military presence in Benin as part of effort to contain the spread of Ebola there.
The army has been deployed there and is busy working to finish these terrorist elements who are very active in that region for quite a long time now.
Lambert Mende is DRC Information Minister. Angola denies abuses against Congolese migrants and refugees and the local population in Difar, Niger, in dire need of mental health services. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. One of the female candidates in Nigeria's 2019 presidential election is demanding a televised debate with President Muhammadu Buhari and other candidates. Obi Agele Ezekwesili, standard-bearer of the Allied Congress Party of Nigeria, said the debate will allow all candidates to present and explain their platforms to the Nigerian people. She says any candidate who refuse to debate do not deserve to lead Nigeria. Ezekwesili says the first debate should be held the week of November 18, the start of official campaigning.
We must have a presidential debate so that all candidates would be able to tell the Nigerian people their thought process, their capacity to have identified the real problems of the people and their solutions to those problems, and to present a case for why they should be elected, considering the multifaceted nature of our crisis that we deal with. We have fiscal crisis, wider economic crisis, we have political crisis, we have moral crisis, we have social crisis, we have security crisis. Now, all of these drivers and factors that shape the decline of countries require much more than flowery words. They require really hard, thought through, evidence-based ideas for dealing with them. I will be presenting that to the Nigerian people. I'd love to hear my co-contestants present their own ideas to me.
Would this be the first time that a presidential debate has been called for and say your proposal is accepted? How long do you think it should last?
Well, you know, we've been having presidential debates, but we've been having contestants who run from presidential debates. So some don't want to ever debate. We are saying no longer acceptable.
You are the leading female presidential candidate now. So I wanted to ask, why are you running to be president?
I am running to be president to show that our country can be incredibly better than it is today. The future of our country is in threat. We must arrest the decline. Enough is enough to the levels of intolerable failure that we have experienced. Failure that has resulted in Nigeria becoming the world capital for extreme poverty, where 87 million of our citizens are in the class of extreme poverty.
Nigeria, the populous country in Africa now, has never had a female president. Why do you suppose this has been this way?
I believe that just as it is in many parts of the world, there was never thinking of leadership as being gender neutral. It was the entrenched patriarchy that made people to assume that it was natural for men to lead and for women to simply look on. Today, it's a better world, a world that recognizes that you need both women and men in leadership.
You're one of the co-founders of Transparency International. So if you talk to President Buhari's government, they claim to be fighting corruption. They are leaving no stone unturned, they would say, in the fight against corruption. So what grade would you give them?
Well, the grade is already given to them. The Transparency International Corruption Perception Index for this year already gave the grade, which is that we're not doing as well as we should do in improving transparency, accountability, and good governance as principles of development of our society. What is missing is that we haven't seen from this government a comprehensive strategy for tackling corruption.
Obiageli Ezekwesili is the presidential candidate of the Allied Congress Party of Nigeria. She was speaking with me from Abuja, Nigeria. South African Deputy President David Mambuza is in South Sudan to show off implementation of that country's revitalized peace agreement. The visit comes as both the South Sudan government and rebel groups continue to trade accusations of ceasefire violation. The latest such accusation came over the weekend when the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, led by General Thomas Cirilo, said his forces were attacked by government troops in Wau and Ye River State. South Sudan presidential spokesman Atain Wekatain says Juba has always been ready to implement the revitalized peace agreement.
The truth of the matter is that the government of South Sudan is willing to implement the agreement. His Excellency, Deputy President of South Africa, came on issues to do with bilateral relationship between the two countries. And yes, of course, he will be briefed by the significant effect the government of the Republic of South Sudan under the leadership of President Salva Kiir Mayardit has taken in regards to implementation of the revitalized peace agreement on a solution of conflict in the country. But the main purpose was for him to come for bilateral issues, something that concerns South Africa and South Sudan. And peace is one of them. You know, it is significant that South Sudan implements peace agreement in the general spirit.
This visit is coming at a time that the Troika, which is made up of the United States, United Kingdom, and Norway, have said that they are finally willing. There's an article quoting the British Special Envoy for South Sudan and Sudan, Ambassador Christopher Trout, saying that the Troika is willing finally to give some funding to this agreement. What does that mean for your government and for the agreement itself?
That is a very, very significant step, given that the three countries are among top donor countries in the world. And by coming to be part of the agreement, you will realistically say, combined with the intention or the political will the government and other parties have shown to implement the revitalized peace agreement, then you can say peace will be relevant, because you believe the parties have the political will to implement it. The issue of no funding, the agreement, is a very serious problem. And I am happy that the troika are willing to show funds on the implementation of the peace agreement.
There's an article I have there quoting the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. That's the faction led by Thomas Cirilo, that your government forces over the weekend attacked his troops in Wau and Ye River State.
I think the opposite is true. Thomas Cirilo did not sign peace agreement, and his forces are on attack, actually. They are trying to take positions so that they can force government to renegotiate with them. And therefore, places like Bagara and Wau have never had, you know, rebel forces. It is a government-controlled area, and they are attacking from outside. Thomas Cirilo is now a warlord.
South Sudan presidential spokesman Atain Wekatain was speaking with me from Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 15th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Rwandan Foreign Minister Louis Mushikiwabo is the new Secretary General of the International Organization of La Francophonie, or in French-speaking countries. But Rwanda, a former Belgian colony where French was the official language, switched to English as the language of education in 2008 and joined the Commonwealth a year later. Political analysts say they are not sure if this new position will lead to smoother smoothening the bad relations between Rwanda and France. But as Eugene Uwimana reports from Kigali, some analysts hope this new high-profile position will lead to better human rights and democratic practices in Rwanda.
According to some political analysts, the win of former Foreign Relations Minister Louise Mushikiwabo has nothing to do with the repentance of France on its alleged role in the 1994 genocide perpetrated against the Tutsi. Dr. Paul Kananula is an international relations and political analyst. He's the president of the Mandela Institute. I don't think that relations are going to be ameliorated because France, in a time of repentance, does not do the big things. On the other hand, also, some French institutions, like army or foreign affairs, have not yet accepted any role in Rwanda's dossier. I don't believe that it is going to change, but in politics, everything is possible. The Rwandan government seems to share this view. Ambassador Olivier Nduhungirehe, the Minister of State in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, says Franco-Rwanda problems have to be sorted out on a bilateral level. Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie is not France. It is composed of 84 members, and France is one of those 84. Our relations with France does not pass through OEF. We talk about it alone as countries. So if the support of French President Macron was not the forgiveness request, why did he endorse Rwanda's nominee? Dr. Paul Kananula thinks that is because France and OEF needed an English-speaking country that is well-placed in the Commonwealth, like Rwanda. I think that France and Canada have supported Mushikiwabo's candidature for both practical and geostrategic reasons. Rwanda occupies a better place of intersection in both French and English spaces in Africa. So it is a sign that OEF does not want a language war between French and English or other colonial languages spoken in Africa. Louise Mushikiwabo's election as Secretary General of 84-member Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie was heartily appreciated by many Rwandans and other international envoys. Even President Paul Kagame's office tweeted about it in English, French, and other official languages. This win also made confident the French speakers in Rwanda. Jean-Baptiste Nkurunziza lives in Kigali.
I think this win is going to change so many things. To speak French in this country, it was like nothing important. And also the French speakers was like incompetent. But nowadays, I think the value of French is going to come back in this country.
Rwanda accuses France to have trained and armed the militia who committed the genocide, where more than 1 million Tutsi perished. France always dismisses the allegations, despite Rwanda presenting what the government calls damning facts. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
The Democratic Republic of Congo says it has beefed up military presence in Beni as part of effort to contain the spread of Ebola there. Lamba Mendes, Minister of Information.
The health minister has informed the government that there is a second resumption of the epidemic due to problem of insecurity in the part of our country in Beni region, because our health personnel are not free to move where it is necessary to accomplish follow-up duties with the people that have been in contact with the deceased people. So insecurity has brought a second resumption of the disease there in Beni.
So what is your government doing to clear this insecurity?
The army have been deployed there and is busy working to finish these terrorist elements who are very active in that region for quite a long time now. This is not the first time they are attacking Beni and some villages around Beni. Even a member of MONUSCO have been declared deceased himself. He's now sick of Ebola, This is the first time we have really witnessed such development in that region. But still, the situation is very, very difficult for us, and we have a lot of concern because insecurity cannot allow medical personnel to move freely all over the country, all over that part of the country. So we have now a total amount of something like 125 cases already, where we have hoped that the disease have stopped. But due to that problem of insecurity, it has resumed again. And we hope that we will end that problem of insecurity so as to allow medical personnel to move and to assist people who are sick.
Minister, what can you tell us? Because we have a report here that Congolese migrants in Angola say some of them were either killed earlier this month in a crackdown by the Angolan government against artisanal diamond miners.
Because Angola is a neighboring country, there is a lot of Congolese living in Angola that have been told to leave the country. Well, we are ready to receive our compatriots, and we are arranging whenever they arrive to receive them and to try to direct them to their villages. The problem now is that they are reporting some brutality from police and army forces when they are caught and when they are forced to leave Angola. That is why we have asked our interior minister to get in touch with counterparts in Angola to inquire and see what happened, because they are speaking of people being wounded. There is even some allegation of people being killed while they are being pushed to leave the country. This is something we cannot accept.
Lambert Mende is Minister of Information of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Let's say Angola has denied any human rights abuses against Congolese migrants. Both refugees and the local population in Difa, Niger, are in dire need of medical health services. Violence in surrounding regions has resulted in a lot of trauma, says Doctors Without Borders coordinator in Niger, Dr. Didier Mukeba Shilala.
This year in Difa, we adopt to use a community approach for our mental activity. And that is our decision this year. And we do this why? Because last year in our cohort, we have not a lot of patients for the children. And we decide for this year to adopt the community approach. And for that, we recruit and deploy mental health worker in the community to work directly with the population and to help us to identify directly and early the population, especially the children, they need mental health assistance.
When you say you're using the community approach to treating and identifying mental health issues, does this mean you're also integrating traditional or community treatments?
Yeah, now we are using just our staff, SF staff, and we choose them in the community and we give them the training to help them to be able to identify the population in the community they need mental health assistance. But all of them is MSF staff.
And so the treatments are MSF treatments that you would use in other areas as well?
Yeah, not local treatment, not local traditional worker, not local drugs, but just we recruit the staff. And all of them is the MSF staff, and we have a manager of for medical activity in Difa, and this guy helped us to give the training, the formation. They help them to have a good level to be able to identify in the community the population that they need mental health assistance.
Why are these efforts so needed in an area like Difa?
Yeah, in Difa we think mental health activity is necessary in Difa because, you know, now it's time, I think, 3 or 4 years, Difa know a lot of insecurity. And this insecurity has, like, consequence, the displacement of population. And we have a lot of refugee population, and we have both the local population and the local and the refugee. The both population are exposed to violence, and this violence is The consequence of this violence is a traumatism for all the population. That's why in DIFA, we need mental activity for this region.
What are the main challenges to addressing mental health needs in the region?
The first one is, DIFA is a region we have a lot of insecurity. That is the first challenge. And the second one is we have not a lot of staff. They have a good level of mental health skills.
That was Dr. Didier Mukeba Sheilala, Doctors Without Borders Medical Coordinator in Niger. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Niamey. Time for Daybreak Africa Sporting. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF AFCON qualifying matches, where a total of 21 games have been slated to be played on Tuesday in the reverse fixture of the games played this past weekend. Kenya inched closer to making a return to the African Cup of Nations after 15 years with an emphatic 3-0 win over Ethiopia played at the overflowing Kasarani Stadium. Goals by Michael Olunga, Eric Yohana and Victor Wanyama all but ensured Kenya will play in Cameroon in 2019. With 7 points from 4 matches, the Harambee Stars will grace next year's AFCON finals in Cameroon if FIFA maintains its suspension of Sierra Leone, the other team in Group F, but will need 3 more points if FIFA lifts the suspension on the West African nation. Sebastian Mine is the Harambee Stars head coach.
It was not easy, but I think also in this parameter we won the game.
Also on Sunday, Guinea-Bissau boosted their AFCON qualifying hopes after securing a come-from-behind 2-1 win over Zambia. In Saturday's late game, Senegal proved too strong for Sudan after romping to a 3-0 win. Also on Saturday, Nigeria's Super Eagles thrumped the Mediterranean Knights of Libya 4-0 to keep their hopes of qualifying for the next AFCON alive after missing out in the last 2 editions. Gernot Rohr was full of praise for Odion Ighalo after the striker scored the hat trick to hand Nigeria a big victory and put them in front of the Libyans on the log.
It's wonderful to see him scoring the 3 goals, but the 3 goals are coming, of course, from the team. And for a good collective work, I'm very, very happy about it because he has been criticized in the social medias.
Staying with the AFCON qualifying matches, the Egyptian Football Association have announced that Mohamed Salah has been released from the Pharaohs camp after struggling with an injury during the Eswatini's match after he sustained a strain on his muscle. The Liverpool winger helped Egypt thrum Eswatini 4-1 in the 2019 African Cup of Nations qualification Group J match in Cairo on Friday. In other sports news, Kenyan former sports minister Hassan Wariru will be charged to court on Monday in relation to the siphoning of funds meant for athletes who competed in Olympics in Brazil 2 years ago. The East African nation enjoyed its most successful Olympics in Rio, winning 6 gold medals, 6 silvers and 1 bronze, all in track and field. But the performance was blighted by claims of corruption among senior government officials and team bosses. An investigation has laid the blame on Hassan Wariru, the sports minister at the time, and 5 other former senior officials. Wariru and others will be charged in relation to the loss of a total of more than $545,000. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, October 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Hello, I'm Lina Mudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we'll have a special discussion on women's well-being around the world. Our guest is Christina Kessler, author of the book Tales of a Naked Swimmer. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.